listening to the radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapters 14 through 17 is where Pastor Sandy will be teaching today.
In high school, I played football. I was the quarterback, and I would run for touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. And the girls would be squealing my name and pom-poms and, oh, you know. And of course, the older I get, the better I was. But you know, all this adulation and the fans going crazy and everything. But, you know, I had everybody blocked out. It was only one person I saw in the stands. It was my dad. And I would always look up there for my dad's approval. And I was never really satisfied. There was always an ache inside until I looked up there and saw my dad do this. That was his sign. Every young man longs for his dad's acceptance. And the fact that David withholds it from Absalom, and relatively, you know, obviously for no reason, really, it only pours fuel on the rage that is brewing in this boy's heart. David is stoking Absalom's rebellion without realizing it. You got to understand, David is a classic example of how not to parent. If you want to wreck your kids, if you want to ruin your kids, here's what you do. Follow David's example. First of all, set a bad example yourself. Go out and commit adultery. Do something like that. Then fail to discipline your children when they follow in your footsteps and commit immorality of their own. And isn't this what happens sometimes? You know, we made those mistakes when we were in high school. You know, we were promiscuous. You know, we were immoral. And we carry this guilt. And so when we see our kids doing the same things, we're reluctant to step up and say, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. You know, we make that mistake. We need to get over it. Hey, just because we made the mistake doesn't mean our kids have to. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. We need to admit what we did was a mistake, and we need to resolve ourselves to help our kids do better and live higher and live more godly lives than we did. David didn't do that. He made the mistake. Then he failed to discipline his kids when they followed in his footsteps. Then he got angry at his children for the sin that they committed following in his footsteps. And he alienated himself from them as a result. Oh, they're an embarrassment. And so he alienated himself from them. And then he ignored the problem and invited them back into his good graces, pretending to forgive them, only to continue to hold the grudge and not really forgive them. And you see what's going on here? I mean, this is a recipe for rebellion in the heart of your kids. Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. So he said to his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire. Well, that'll get your attention. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. And parents, maybe your kids are setting your fields on fire because that's the only way they can get your attention. The only time you bother to talk to him is when he gets into trouble. What's he have to do to talk to his dad? Get in trouble? Some of you have set up that kind of scenario. Well, then Joab arose, and he came to Absalom's house and said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, look, I sent to you saying, come here so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Jezreel? It would be better for me to still be there. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me. Absalom is desperate. He wants to communicate to the king, to his dad. And so he tells Joab, you need to go to my dad and you need to tell him, look, either embrace me or execute me. But I'm miserable living in this limbo, not really knowing where I stand with my own father. All dads, every father in the house tonight needs to pay attention to this. Absalom is an adult, but his relationship with his Father is still shaping who he is and how he feels and what he thinks about himself. This is why I say a father has an inexplicable power over his kids. And Dad, when you withhold your acceptance because of nothing more than your stubborn pride, you are doing irreparable damage to your family. Get over it. Forgive them. Love them. Look past their mistakes and love them. They're your kids. Verse 33. So Joab went to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. Father and son are finally united. But it was too little too late. David's belated blessing couldn't uproot the seeds of rebellion that had already been sown in Absalom's heart. And a confrontation between father and son is on the horizon now that is going to draw the entire nation into a vicious and bloody civil war. Chapter 15. After this, it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. In other words, he develops his own posse, sort of his own secret service. Now, Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. And so it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you." And whose fault would that be? Well, the king's. Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land. And everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." Oh, if I were king, I would be different. I would be a good king. Justice would be served. We heard a lot of that in this past election. We'll see. And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Absalom created the impression that King David was too busy for the common man's concerns. Oh, but he would take the time. He would make the effort to hear their grievances. And slowly, Absalom begins to steal the affection of the people. He begins to turn the hearts of the people away from David toward himself. A rebellion, a coup d'etat is brewing. Well, now it came to pass after 40 years, this went on for a long time, that Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to the Lord. For your servant took a vow while I dwelt in Geshur in Syria, saying, 'If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord.' And the king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and went to Hebron." Then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, 'Absalom reigns in Hebron.' He's planning his coup d'etat against his own father. And don't miss the significance of the location. You remember before David reigned in Jerusalem over all of Israel, he reigned in Judah where? In Hebron, that's right. He ruled 7.5 years in Hebron before he changed his capital to Jerusalem. And Absalom is returning to his father's first throne to institute his revolt. And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem. And they went along innocently and did not know anything. They're just kind of getting lured in. Over the years, Absalom has been building support for an overthrow. And he's courted friends in high places. And he's gotten people on his side. But these 200 men, they're not really privy to the plot. They just happen to accompany him to Hebron. One of the key defectors, though, was one of David's chief counselors, trusted advisors. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel. the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, from Gilo, where he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number. And, you know, having this Ahithophel on his team, Ahithophel was a shrewd dealer. This added momentum to Absalom's cause. It's interesting that David refers to Ahithophel in Psalm 41, verse 9, and in Psalm 55, verses 12 through 14. And David remembers the pain of being betrayed by someone so close to him as Ahithophel. Let me read to you David's words. Even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. For it is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has magnified himself against me, then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my companion and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked to the house of God in the throng. In other words, we worshiped God together, he's saying. And now you've betrayed me. As the old saying goes, against a foe I can defend, but heaven help me against a disloyal friend. Wounds that hurt most are those inflicted by supposed friends. Well, Ahithophel, he was wise, he was skillful, and like Absalom, he was very bitter. For his family tree reveals why Ahithophel betrayed David. When you piece together 2 Samuel 23, verse 34, and chapter 11, verse 3, you discover that Ahithophel was Bathsheba's grandfather. She was the daughter of Eliam, one of David's mighty men, who was the grandchild of Ahithophel. Evidently, Ahithophel and Absalom had one thing in common. They never got over their bitterness toward David. He resented David for how he broke up Uriah and Bathsheba, for how David destroyed their family. He resented him. And bitterness is quick to find a buddy. Bitterness always finds a buddy, trust me. And that's why Ahithophel joins in Absalom's revolt. Verse 13. Now a messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, and we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." David knows that Absalom's revolt has gained momentum. And so he decides to flee Jerusalem and regroup in the Judean wilderness. Ironically, David has come full circle. He ends up back in the wilderness where he used to hide when he was on the run for the madman Saul, King Saul. Now he's the king, the fugitive king in exile, or he's about to be. And the king's servant said to the king, "We are your servants, ready to do whatever my lord the king commands." They renew their loyalty to David. Well, then the king went out with all his household after him, but the king left 10 women, concubines, to keep the house. And the king went out with all the people after him and stopped at the outskirts. Then all his servants passed before him, and all the Cherethites, all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men who had followed him from Gath, passed before the king. They'd been with him a long time, and they were sticking with him to the end. And he's taking inventory now with everybody who's left, everybody who hasn't betrayed him, and going over to Absalom's side. Well, then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, "Why are you also going with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your own place. In fact, you came only yesterday. Should I make you wander up and down with us today, since I go, I know not where? Return and take your brethren back. Mercy and truth be with you." And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord lives and as my lord the king lives, surely in whatever place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also your servant will be." And I am sure that Ittai's loyalty encouraged David, strengthened his heart. David still had the allegiance of a number of brave men. So David said to Ittai, "Go and cross over." Then Ittai the Gittite and all his men and all the loyal ones who were with him crossed over. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people crossed over. The king himself also crossed over the brook Kidron. The Kidron is the ravine that separates the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives. And so David is leaving the city now. And they cross over the Kidron, and they begin to rise and go up the Mount of Olives. Now they're looking down on the capital that they have conquered, but now they're being forced to abandon. He doesn't know if he'll ever return. This was his lowest low, certainly. And all the people crossed over toward the way of the wilderness. There was Zadok also and all the Levites with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had finished crossing over from the city. And then the king said to Zadok, "Carry the Ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and show me both it and his dwelling place. But if he says thus, 'I have no delight in you, here I am,' let him do to me as seems good to him." David's faith isn't in symbols. It's not in relics. It's not even in the Ark of the Covenant. The king's faith is in the Lord himself and in the Lord's mercy. So he says, "Put the ark back at its place. God is with me. He'll be with me." The king also said to Zadok the priest, "Are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, your son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will wait in the plains of the wilderness until word comes from you to inform me." Therefore, Zadok and Abiathar carried the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and they remained there. And David has hopes now of using these two priests as sort of undercover agents, informants. He hopes that they'll be able to crack Absalom's inner circle and report back to him. And so David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives, and he wept as he went up, and he had his head covered and went barefoot. And let me tell you, you know, those of you that are going with us to Israel soon, you walk up the Mount of Olives barefoot, I mean, it's covered with rocks. There are rocks everywhere. I can't imagine walking up the Mount of Olives barefoot. I mean, it was a torturous ordeal. And all the people who were with him covered their heads and went up, weeping as they went up. You know, it reminds me of Jesus' departure from Jerusalem after being rejected by the religious establishment during that last week. And you remember what Jesus did from the top of the Mount of Olives. He wept over the city, just as David here weeps. And it's interesting, perhaps both David and Jesus, the son of David, wept at the very same spot. Remember, too, the Garden of Gethsemane is on the Mount of Olives. And it's possible that David wept over the betrayal of his son Absalom at the very same spot where Jesus would weep just hours before his betrayal by Judas. Some interesting parallels going on here. Yeah, it's interesting. Jesus told a parable of 10 virgins who needed to keep oil in their lamps and be ready for his return. And it's interesting, David left behind 10 concubines back in the palace waiting on him to return. Some interesting parallels. Well, verse 31. Then someone told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom." And David said, "Oh Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." For you see, David was afraid of Ahithophel. Ahithophel was a shrewd man. He was a wise man. And David knew that he would give good counsel to Absalom. And so he says, "Lord, turn his counsel into foolishness." Now it happened when David had come to the top of the mountain where he worshiped God. And notice this. This shows you David's heart. In the midst of David's weeping, he worships God. Somebody told me this morning, didn't actually see it, but yesterday they were interviewing Mark Richt after the Georgia game. And they said, "Well, you've had a hard month there, Coach Rick. You know, I bet you're really thankful to God. I bet you're really praising God, you know, after this victory," kind of being sarcastic to him. And the guy told me this morning, he said, Rick turned and he snapped right back and he said, "Hey, I praise God whether we win or whether we lose." Now let's talk about the game. I like that. But hey, David, I mean, he's weeping. This is his worst defeat. And yet notice what he's doing. He's worshiping God. God is worthy to be worshiped in the good times and in the bad times. Psalm 3 is prefaced. A psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Let me encourage you to go home tonight and read Psalm 3 in parallel with this Bible study. I like how that psalm begins. And again, these are David's words as he's leaving the city. Lord, how they have increased who trouble me. Many are they who rise up against me. Many are they who say of me, there is no help for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory, and the one who lifts up my head. And I love how he ends Psalm 3. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing is upon your people. Read that psalm tonight, Psalm 3. Well, verse 32 tells us David worshiped. As David worshiped, there was Hushai, the Archite, coming to meet him with his robe torn and dust on his head. And David said to him, if you go on with me, then you will become a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, I will be your servant, O king, as I was your father's servant previously, so I will now also be your servant. Then you may defeat the counsel of Ahithophel for me. David plants another mole. Hushai, the private eye. Hushai, the spy guy, sent right back into Absalom's inner circle. Do you not have Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, with you there? Therefore, it will be that whatever you hear from the king's house, you shall tell to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests. Indeed, they have with them their two sons, that guy, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them you shall send me everything you hear. So Hushai, David's friend, went into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. Chapter 16. When David was a little past the top of the mountain, there was Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, who met him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on them 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, what do you mean to do with these? And so Ziba said, the donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink. And then the king said, and where is your master's son? And Ziba said to the king, indeed, he is staying in Jerusalem. For he said, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me. You remember Mephibosheth? He was Jonathan's son and Saul's grandson. And here Ziba is accusing him of staying behind, thinking that David is now going to be dethroned and the kingdom will go back to the dynasty of Saul and perhaps he'll be in line. Of course, we're going to find out later that that may have not been Mephibosheth's attitude at all. It may have just been Ziba putting words in his mouth. Well, so the king said to Ziba, here, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours. And we're going to find out later that David doesn't really know which one of them to believe. Mephibosheth's going to tell one story. Ziba's going to tell the other story. And so David's just going to split all the goods in half and say, half's yours and half's yours. And, you know, you ever had that with two kids? You didn't know which one to believe. And so you just cut the dog in half. Half's yours, half's yours. And Ziba said, I humbly bow before you that I may find favor in your sight, my Lord, O King. And later this, as I said, this crippled Mephibosheth will claim that Ziba, you know, made all this look like, you know, he was forsaking David and pledging his loyalty to Absalom. But all the time, you know, Mephibosheth was crippled. He couldn't move. And so he was stuck there. Ziba got out before, didn't give him a ride. What's a cripple got to do? We'll find that out later.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy, for sharing again with us from the book of 2 Samuel. We are so glad all of you have joined us today for Sandy Adams Radio. The story of King David teaches us that a heart of faith is deeply pleasing to God. When God looks into your heart, what is it that he sees there? Like David, we can ask God to search us and reveal the state of our heart to us. And like David, when he brings to mind anything that is outside his will, we can turn and follow God again. If you'd like someone to pray with you, call us at 770-736-2828. Once again, that number is 770-736-2828. Let us know your prayer requests or your praises. We'd love to rejoice with you too. If you live in or around Atlanta, Georgia, we'd like to invite you to Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain for our weekend services. You can find out all about the church, including directions and service times, at our website, sandyadams.org. Also, there you can find recordings of today's message and many other studies in the Word. We'd love to have you partner with us in ministry through prayer, and if the Lord leads, financially. We've set up a secure online page under Donate on sandyadams.org, where you can find more information. That's all we have time for today. Be sure to join us next time to hear more from the book of 2 Samuel with Pastor Sandy Adams.